Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein submits his resignation.
Well, according to the resignation letter that he submitted, his last day will be May 11th.
Plus, Apple reports its earnings as iPhone sales lag.
If you really look back, we hit peak iPhone in 2016.
And Japan's emperor begins his historic abdication. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we get into our main story this morning, the abdication of Japan's Emperor Akihito, he's the first to voluntarily leave the throne in 200 years. Here's what you missed.
Deutsche Bank has some real deep involvement with Mr. Trump in guaranteed loans. They were dealing with him and are dealing with him when no other bank will deal with him.
That was Maxine Waters in 2017 discussing Democrats' desire to better understand President Trump's relationship to Deutsche Bank. Now, Germany's biggest bank has for decades been the president's primary bank. Since 1998, it has led or participated in loans to the president and his associates of $2.5 billion. Late on Monday, the president, three of his children, and his real estate businesses filed a federal lawsuit to block Deutsche Bank and Capital One from complying with congressional subpoenas for documents related to him and his family, arguing that the suits were intended to harass him. The suit claims that the House is asking for records of every single checking withdrawal, credit card swipe, or debit card purchase, no matter how trivial or small, made by each and every member of the Trump family. And Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein submitted his resignation in a letter late yesterday. Here's Sadie Gurman from the Justice Department in Washington.
He was planning to leave as soon as Bill Barr, who was a mentor of his, got settled into place here at the Justice Department. But Mr. Barr asked him to stick around to help oversee, you know, the final stages of the Russia investigation and to help him with the transition. So that's what he did.
When we started the company, we felt that there was a new energy that was emerging.
You might be one of the many millions of people who have found themselves drinking kombucha in a WeWork over the past 9 years. The shared office space company surprised many of its investors when it filed confidential paperwork yesterday for a public stock offering. We report that the company, which is valued at nearly $47 billion, hasn't yet hired any bankers. But it chose the public market route after a funding deal with the Japanese conglomerate SoftBank fell apart. WeWork has come under fire in the past for its creative accounting measures, you might remember community-adjusted EBITDA, and its large losses. Last year, the company lost $1.9 billion. Now, our main story this morning, the abdication of Japan's Emperor Akihito. Peter Landers is our Tokyo bureau chief. So, Peter, who is Emperor Akihito? Tell me a little bit about him, and why did he decide to abdicate?
Emperor Akihito is 85 years old. He was 11 and a half about when World War II ended, so he did experience a little bit of the war and had to escape to the countryside because Tokyo was being bombed so severely. And that really shaped his whole life. He inherited the throne from his father, Emperor Hirohito, in 1989, and has been on the throne for 30 years. And a big part of his reign has been about remembering the war and what it did to Japan, what it did to other countries in Asia. He's gone as far as the island of Palau in the Pacific to commemorate the war dead and remember some of the battles of the war. And at 85 years old, he was suffering from declining health, although he still is in a fairly good health for a man of his age and is able to walk around and attend ceremonies and speak and so on. So he's in relatively good health for a man of 85. But several years ago, after some health troubles, he told the nation in a sort of indirect way that he felt it was his time to abdicate, and a law was passed allowing him to do so. And so on May 1st, the throne will pass to his eldest son, Crown Prince Naruhito.
Tell me about Naruhito. What's he like?
He is a very mild-mannered fellow from all accounts. He plays the viola. He studied the history of river transport at Oxford University in the 1980s. And
right, as you do.
So, and he has expressed an interest in global affairs. And it was interesting to read the transcript of his press conference a year ago when he was asked about events in the news that had made an impression. And he cited a very specific figure for the number of refugees in the world and talked about global conflicts that were increasing the number of refugees. And he mentioned this year that he would like his wife, Crown Princess Masako, the next empress, to take a greater role in helping him talk about some of these issues and address them. So I think he'll bring a more global perspective to the throne.
Now, there's been some criticism in Japan that the current rules don't allow for a woman to take the throne. It seems to come in contrast to Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's efforts to try and get more women in the workforce.
Yes, it's an obvious contradiction with Prime Minister Abe's policy. He talks about a society where women can shine, and yet here is the symbol of the nation, and only a man can shine in that role under the current law. And they talked about changing it more than a decade ago when it looked like there were no more male heirs to the throne. But subsequently, a male grandchild of the present emperor was born. And so the discussion is kind of off the table. And you do see even a contradiction in terms of the people who support Prime Minister Abe. There are a number of conservatives who were some of his strongest backers for the prime ministership when he first got it, who feel that this is a tradition. It's not necessarily a tradition that's always been observed, but it is a pretty long-standing tradition that only a man can be on the throne in Japan. So they feel that that tradition should not be changed.
And finally, this might sound silly, but why should we care? What does this transition mean for Japan? What can it tell us about the country's future?
One thing it tells us about Japan is just the extraordinary continuity of this institution, which has gone through so many upheavals and twists and turns over more than 1,500 years. There have been times when the emperor was an absolute ruler in a political sense, and then other times, such as now, when the emperor is more like a symbol of the state or someone with symbolic powers and ceremonial powers as opposed to actual political control of the country. So it's an institution that's undergone extraordinary change, and yet here we are in 2019, marking the enthronement of a new emperor, and they've been holding ceremonies like this maybe as far back as, you know, the 500s, the 6th century AD. So it's an example of the extraordinary continuity in Japan. You find that in the corporate world as well. There's so many companies here that go back hundreds of years. That's one area where I'd say it's sort of relevant to today. And another aspect of the throne is the emperor is a symbol of the unity of the Japanese people and does have a quiet influence, I would say, on popular attitudes. I think Emperor Akihito and his wife, Empress Michiko, were both quiet supporters of the current constitution. Not that they ever expressed open opinions about it, but they talked about peace. They talked about the roots of the current constitution in documents that Japanese people wrote themselves in the late 19th century. And so that had a quiet influence over Japanese attitudes. And so statements that Naruhito makes or that the new Empress Masako may make about foreigners in Japan, about foreign relations, even if they're very vague in general, they may shift the ground and set sort of a tone for the entire country.
You can find our full coverage of the ceremony at WSJ.com. On to markets. Google's parent company, Alphabet, had a rare earnings miss yesterday. The company posted its slowest revenue growth since 2015. It was struggling to fend off competition from the likes of Amazon, Facebook, and Twitter. Shares were down nearly 7% in after-hours trading, so it's worth keeping an eye on what happens when markets open. Elsewhere, a key gauge of Chinese manufacturing activity came in lower than expected. Nate Taplin has more from Hong Kong.
Basically, economists have been surprised by how strong the reading was in March, not just for the PMI, but for most other data. Nearly everything surprised on the upside. And so a lot of people were seeing that as evidence that actually the recovery in China was quite strong. But the reading that came out today was relatively weak for the PMI, both for the official manufacturing PMI and for the private one compiled by Caixin. One of the things that's been kind of boosting markets in the past month and a half or so has been all this apparently quite good data coming out of China. if people start to kind of doubt that that's the case, that, you know, there's a rebound coming, but maybe not as strong as people thought, that could, you know, have some downside for industrial equities in the U.S. Or other kind of or commodity plays, these kind of things.
And now the SCED. Here's what to look forward to later today. Apple will report its earnings after the closing bell. The company's struggled with sluggish iPhone sales, not just in the U.S., but globally. Many of us just don't want to upgrade our models. Trip Mickle is our Apple reporter in San Francisco.
If you look at sales in China of overseas smartphones, the numbers have been really, really disappointing. I mean, the whole smartphone industry there is in recession. The Chinese Ministry of Industry and Information Technology reported smartphone shipments fell 20%. In February. But if you look at overseas smartphones, it's even worse. That's largely Apple and Samsung, and sales of overseas handsets fell 47% in that period. And that's just really been a challenge for Apple, and one that Tim Cook really spoke at length about last time he spoke to analysts and investors in January.
And one more earnings report for you today, this one from General Electric. The company's struggled since the financial crisis, the result of accounting issues and poor investments in areas like its power business. Tom Gritta, our GE reporter, says this isn't the quarter or the year to expect the company to make a full turnaround, although the installation of Larry Culp as the new CEO bodes well.
You know, bringing in Larry, who is an outsider, the first outsider to be CEO of GE in its history, I think added a lot of credibility for folks on Wall Street who really saw the problems that GE is having as being cultural. And so, you know, I think, but Larry has been very clear that this is a multi-year process. You're not going to see in the earnings results, you know, that, oh, look, everything's great. They're on the right path.
Finally, today's question. I want to go back to WeWork. Have you used one of the company's co-working spaces? What do you think about their decision to go public? Would you invest? Tweet us at WSJ Podcasts or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.